miner's got an 8-hour work day. Wages increase, but the one man drill was certain to stay.
Okay.
Then you don't care about the Italian hall, you got that and so forth.
Well,
we can just mention that in passing.
Oh.
I was wondering, you said you worked on the later air drill?
Yes.
What was it like in previous models, or don't you didn't? So, let's just do a test here. Can you just read a couple of lines? Could you just read a couple of lines? I want to test this thing.
All right. First, to start off with, the original name of Atlantic Mine was Sault Pewabic, Michigan. The Sault Pewabic and Adams mines were discovered by Captain William B. Frew in 1864, and he was instrumental in the formation of the Sault Pewabic Copper Company with the following directors and officers: Elisha T. Loring, S. T. Snow, and E. D. Brigham of Boston, Massachusetts, Charles H. Palmer of Pontiac, Michigan.
Okay.
President Elisha T. Loring, Secretary and Treasurer C.J. Higginson, local officers William B. Frew, Superintendent, Charles H. Palmer, Engineer, William T. Forster, Stamp Mill Superintendent, William Ryan, Mining Captain, William R. Noble, Clerk. The ancient diggings here, which are more extensive than any that the above parties heretofore ever seen. An ancient pit has been opened to a depth of 22 feet, as they evidently stopped sinking at that depth on account of them not being able to take out a large mass of copper lying on the bottom of the pit. There was also other ancient pits, drifts, and rock hammers. Who the ancient miners were is not known. William Bell Frew, while riding on horseback in 1864 on Section 9, which was Sault Pewabic, noticed the copper shining, or in other words, the outcrop of copper on surface, and that led him to discover Sault Pewabic. Later on, Section 4, Adams, copper was discovered, and they became what is now Atlantic Mine, Michigan. William B. Frew also later became very famous with the Silver Islet Mine, which is prominently known. The Sault Pewabic Copper Company went bankrupt. Property sold in federal court in Detroit, Michigan, in year about 1872. In 1872, the company was reorganized and named Atlantic Mining Company. Also, the town was renamed Atlantic Mine, Michigan. The existing Atlantic Mining Company was formed by the consolidation of the former company by the same name, owning the Sault Pewabic and Adams Mining Companies. Officers: President John J. Crane, Treasurer James M. Mills, Secretary John Stanton, Directors John J. Crane, James M. Mills, M. F. Merritt, Jordan L. Mott, Alfred N. Lawrence, John Stanton, and Samuel L. Smith. John Stanton was given by the Board of Directors the operating and executive power of the company. Local officers: Philip R. Roberts, Superintendent, William Tonkin, Mining Captain, William J. Evans, Stamp Mill Superintendent, B.Y. McKees, Clerk. At the closing of the mine in 1906, due to air blast, the directors were as follows: Joseph E. Gay, John R. Stanton, J.W. Hardley, William J. Stewart, William A. Payne, Joseph W. Howe, Samuel L. Smith. Officers: Joseph E. Gay, President, John R. Stanton, Secretary and Treasurer. Local officers: Frank McM. Stanton, Agent or General Manager, Theodore Dengler, Superintendent, Adelbert D. Edwards, Clerk, John Stratton, Mining Captain, F.G. Coggan, Stamp Mill Superintendent. Most likely, the given name of Atlantic Mine was because the capital and directors, with the exception of Samuel L. Smith, who was from Michigan, were from the Eastern Seaboard, with derivation of name of Atlantic from that locality, and apparently for the working region mine added, which is an excavation in the earth from which rock and minerals are taken or extracted. And as nobody regarding source has not been able to answer me the question why, who, where, and how Atlantic Mine got its name, so therefore the above is my own opinion. General office at Atlantic Mining Company in 1872 was 23 and 25 Nassau Street, corner of Cedar, New York, New York. the D.A. Stratton Company began operating a sawmill and handle factory in the year 1912 and ceased operations in 1949 or early part of 1950. Very truly yours, Wilfred Erickson, Atlantic Mine, Michigan, 49905. I want that because that's only just that I could give a lot more history. Okay. You don't want that, do you?
No, that's okay. That man, Stanton, that you mentioned, was he connected with something else?
That man was connected all over, Arizona and all over. And he was head of the New York Stock Exchange. And, he was quite a man, Stanton was. And that's where they get that dope lot from me.
Was he one of the administrative people of the Calumet and Hecla?
He was not connected with Calumet and Hecla, but there's nine mines that he was connected with. There was the Atlantic and the Central and the Baltic and the Wolverine and the Winona and the Michigan and the Globe and the Alloway.
And then I heard another man's name there, Gay. I suppose Gay.
Gay was in with him. Yeah. The Gay and Payne and Stanton, them three were together always.
They've named the town after Gay.
That is right.
But they haven't named one after Stanton?
You read that article in that green sheet there? They would have named South Range Gay, Stanton. Yeah. But there's another Stanton in Lower Michigan, and they were not able to. But instead, they named the township of Stanton. They partitioned it off on Hancock Township. And there's a Stanton Avenue in Atlantic Mine and in South Range and in Baltic and in Mohawk.
He wasn't a Michigander, was he?
New York. He was born in Bristol, England.
I read that only 10% of all the money that was ever made from copper stayed in Michigan. The rest went out.
That could be so, because Quincy A. Shaw, like of CNH, he was the largest stockholder, and of Quincy Mining Company, Thomas F. Mason was. And the largest stockholder in Atlantic was, of the latter years anyhow, was Joseph E. Gay. And William A. Payne, the founder of Copper Range, he was the largest stockholder in Copper Range. I have all of them there.
He was the founder of Copper Range Company?
That's right.
Which is separate from, that's the one that's out west, isn't it? And White Pine?
Well, White Pine is a subsidiary of Copper Range.
Yeah, but it was founded here.
That's right. William A. Payne, they organized first the Copper Range Company, and it's the consolidated company, and it was a holding company. And they're the ones who put in that railroad. Then after Stanton was connected, like with Baltic and Gay and them, then they got Baltic into it, and then Tri-Mountain, and then they were naturally half owners in Champion. St. Mary's Mineral Land owned 50% of the stock, and Copper Range owned 50% of the stock.
Were those mines, the Tri-Mountain and the Winona and Atlantic mines, all those, were they there before the Calumet and Hecla mines
no.
were founded?
No. I have read when they knew about Calumet and Hecla, Edwin J. Hulbert, in 1858, but he's only given the credit for discovering it in 64 because he kept it as a secret.
Yeah.
And he was doing that work on the side. Atlantic, or we'd say South Pewabic, that's the old name. That was a few months earlier discovered in 1864 than what Calumet and Hecla was.
I read that Hulbert, his discovery was almost exact to the limits on the load that lay beneath. The original Calumet and Hecla load, the Hecla load that was first?
There was two. One end was called Hecla and the other end was called Calumet. And they were incorporated as separate companies. But your major stockholders, like Shaw, he was connected with both.
Yeah.
with the Calumet and with Hecla. And then they organized some other companies, Portland and Scott. And in 1871, they combined them all together and became Calumet and Hecla.
Was there any truth to that story about the pigs?
About what?
About the pigs?
No. I have all that here. That's false. About them discovering the pigs. Covering the copper.
Yeah.
That is false. I have all the history here if you want it. Bill Royal's pigs.
Yeah.
But Halbert, he gets credit for discovering CNH.
Well,
and it was only a catch. It was buried copper. But it happened to be so close to the lode. And then they went over to the lode and they found some of that there conglomerate rock.
You mean there really were some pigs in a hole?
Huh?
There really were some pigs in a hole?
Yes, they were, but they're not connected with Halbert. They're connected with, belong to Bill Royal.
Yeah.
But Halbert doesn't give those pigs any credit at all. Pigs did go in a hole, there's no question about that. But Halbert really discovered CNH.
Yeah.
And they may have went in a hole afterwards, after Halbert had made his discovery. But as I stated before, in 58, he knew already about it. But he kept it to himself, see?
What kind of copper was it that Halbert found, the Calumet and Hecla?
It was a native copper, but a conglomerate rock. But where he first found, it's that catch. It's a burying place.
Yeah.
And they figured that the Indians transported from Isle Royal, brought it over and put it in that catch or that burying pit, and for some reason or another, they don't know why, they never came back to get it. And that's where Halbert got it. But then when he found a conglomerate rock close by, well, that got him suspicious that there must be a lode close by. And then he started to look around and dig and so forth, and he found a Calumet lode, conglomerate.
Well, what's the difference between the Calumet lode, conglomerate copper, and the type of copper that the Ransom Sheldon found, that Powabic lode?
Well, one is a megaloid, that's softer rock, and conglomerate is hard, it's small pebbles. It's what they call the hard rock. That's the difference. And most of the lodes here are a megaloid. But there's a Calumet conglomerate, and there's a alloy conglomerate.
I didn't know that.
So conglomerate is real hard rock, but it's all in small pebbles.
Is that the kind of copper they were mining at the Centennial and the Kearsarge mine?
That was the megaloid.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, it's megaloid at Centennial.
What about the Kearsarge? Which one is
it over here? Kearsarge would come under megaloid.
They were both a megaloid.
Yeah. The conglomerate didn't prove worthwhile mining only in Calumet. They found it elsewhere, but it wasn't profitable. And there's one other place in Keweenaw now, just it doesn't come in my mind. What's the name of that conglomerate? But there's two conglomerate lodes that I do know of. But the only one that ever proved profitable was the Calumet conglomerate.
Is it because it was richer, or they could afford to mine it?
It wasn't rich enough.
No, but I mean, could the Calumet people afford to mine it, or was it richer?
You mean outside of Calumet?
No, was the Calumet copper conglomerate, was that richer than the alloys?
Oh, yes, absolutely, definitely. Oh, yes. They average, the first years, they're 90 pounds per ton of copper, the conglomerate did. But then naturally, when they went down deeper, it got leaner.
Is it true that the Powabic amygdaloid copper, that only averaged 6 pounds per ton? But it was, it seems I read that it was 6 pounds per ton or something that Ransom Sheldon first started out with. Or isn't that?
Not Pewabic.
No.
No, not Pewabic.
Is the Quincy part of the Pewabic? The Quincy.
Quincy,
line?
Yes. To start off with, Quincy commenced operations in 1848, and they did not. It was unprofitable, and in 1855, Bill Frew discovered the Pewabic Lode, and naturally, when he discovered it and proved rich, then Quincy went over and they discovered it on their land in 56, and in 57, Franklin discovered the Pewabic Lode. And that's where Quincy made its mine money with on the Pewabic Lode. But Bill Frew discovered the Pewabic Lode at the Pewabic Mining Company.
Where does Ransom Sheldon fit in?
Ransom Sheldon really came in Houghton here, most on the Sheldon and Columbian mine, and he might have been connected with others. He was when the Salt Pewabic and Adams went bankrupt, Ransom Sheldon was just a trustee for the men. After and they operated it all just a short length of time. But Sheldon, I believe he was in with his brother-in-law, C.C. Douglas, at the Quincy before it got to be prominent and so forth.
Is his fame really then in building up the two cities? Did he start the two cities more or less?
Ransom Sheldon was the first, he had the first home in Houghton in 1852. But he was, to start off with, he was first at Portage Entry. And then when they got connected with that Quincy mine, he was at Quincy, and then he moved in 52, he moved to Houghton. And the second family in Houghton was Edwards. I forget what is, I have it in my notebook, all right, if I look it up today.
Yeah. You want to read that now? I think, is that about the air blasts? I think
that is right.
We got away from that, sorry.
Okay. Well, can you start
that
now?
That was interesting. Sure.
Air blast, Atlantic mine. In year 1904, serious trouble was experienced with caving ground due to air blasts. An air blast is merely the compression of air in underground openings caused by the fall of considerable quantities of rock in old workings. The trouble became so acute that the management decided to change the entire plan of mining. The operating shafts are to be sunk to the boundary. Thence, levels run to the extreme length operated, beginning at the bottom and stoping backwards toward the shaft, using waste rock for filling so far as possible and permitting the ground to follow in when stoped out, leaving a 20-foot floor on each level and stoping backwards to the shafts. In May 1906, the tense situation was rendered more acute, drying of all operating shafts, and interfered with running the skips. The hanging wall began subsiding from the bottom. May 12, 1906, rock skips stuck in shaft D. May 18, 1906, work ceases due to air blasts. The worst air blast, May 17, 1906, at least 50 air blasts had been experienced. The hanging wall squeezed or subsided upon the foot wall in a large area. The subsidence first appeared at the 26th level in a very slight degree, then downward, then upward. Depth of mine about 3,000 feet, 37 levels. In Houghton, several houses were shaken due to the Atlantic mine cave-ins as of May 27, 1906. Also, ground caves in about May 27, 1906, near number 4 shaft, due to air blasts. A 15 feet wide and 40 feet long, the space or depression, and other cave-ins. Air and dust would come up through the shaft holes. One residence was lowered about 4 inches. Large cracks in ground were seen many hundred feet from the shafts towards the hanging. The caving and air blasts are worse than ever met with by any mine. The worst subsistence or disturbance between the 16th and 26th levels. The pressure at 3,000 feet, assuming 80% of the vein rock taken out, is 1,800 ton per square foot. It's beyond the scope of human agency to successfully resist such pressure. Pillars crushed, cause of air blast, not enough rock pillars left intact to support the above weight of ground. In other words, too much copper vein rock removed. The rock pillars and supporting timber could not hold above weight of ground. Length of vein work, 2,500 feet. Subsistence of hanging wall due to crushing and closing of the shafts, not sufficient support. When the supporting timber rotted, loose ground would fall down and cause air compression to aggravate air blasts. Well, that is that, but do you want to see pictures of Atlantic Mine cavings?
Did you work in the Atlantic Mine?
No, I was born in 1903, and they had the air blast in 1906.
And that was it? It was all through? Atlantic Mine was closed down forever?
The Atlantic Mine operated Section 16. That's on the Balik Load. But they lost a lot of money there. There wasn't too much copper. It was very lean. It was between the Balik and the Superior mines. They were all on the same load. And they figured that when Superior had copper and Balik had copper, in between Atlantic should find on the Section 16 copper. But evidently they didn't find it, see?
So for all practical purposes, that mine was...
Pardon?
For all practical purposes, the Atlantic mine was really finished by the...
1906, yes. And they were going to open up it later on and put in a foot vertical shafts.
Yeah.
A vertical shaft, that's right, and then catch it with crosscuts, or else put it on the same incline, about 150 feet back of the vein.
Yeah. Did you work in any of the mines?
Yes, I have. I worked 9 years at Painesdale.
Oh.
From 1929 to 1938.
Did you ever experience an air blast there?
Painesdale didn't have any then. No.
It was just sort of the this area, huh? The Houghton...
Pardon?
Did the air blasts occur usually just in this area?
I read in there. Maybe I shouldn't repeat it. It goes on there.
I was just wondering if they mined a uniform load and left no pillars, didn't they learn after they did that the first time, or couldn't they leave pillars?
Well, they didn't expect it is gonna that was gonna happen. See, that's the first time it ever happened. See, most all of these mines they have pillars, because a lot of them are not a continuous vein. Like Atlantic was all the way. If you start from one end, it was copper all the way, and it was low grade. It was lowest grade mine run successfully by man. But it was copper all the way. Some of these other mines, they're rich, and then again you get a poor spot, and then they leave pillars and so forth.
So they took everything they could?
They took, that's the reason she caved, took everything out, see?
Jeez.
And the deeper it got, the more pressure.
I know how thankful I was to see those pillars when we went down the Copper Falls mine. Illegally, I guess, but we anyway. Geez, they must have been 20 feet in diameter, and I guess they're bigger than that at White Pine, aren't they?
I've been White Pine mine. I didn't measure them, but I would judge that they're probably 20 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
Of course, they do have shaft pillars usually, especially on these here native copper mines, about 150 feet, 200 feet on each side of the shaft. But the later years, what they start doing, they put their shafts, like in Winona and Superior, they put them in a foot, about 100 feet or so in a foot, and then they'd have cross cuts, and then mine out all the vein rocks, see. But years ago they didn't know that, see, or didn't do it, see.
You suppose the Atlantic mine would still be there if they had mined the...
Well, I wouldn't say that, I wouldn't know how long it would have lasted, but it would have lasted for some time yet, because the bottom levels were richer than the top levels. But then I couldn't say how many years, it all depend how deep it the copper went, but eventually by now there's a possibility that it wouldn't, because it would be down so deep, you know.
Yeah.
So much of that copper, it used to go into the, with the stamp sand, see? And if they didn't have flotation, they wouldn't be able to operate white pine today either. But it's to catch all that fine copper, see?
Well, is the nature of the rock surrounding the copper more crushable than the kind of copper that they had, like, say, the conglomerate of the Calumet?
Well, it's it seems to me that it holds up better than this native copper. In one way, they don't have fissures or cracks or so forth in it, see? That, like you take these here, like when I work paints a labolic load, you'd get cracks and you'd get a lot of loose and so forth, see? They had to be propped up, see? That,
they don't have that there.
No, white pine doesn't have any props. They just got big pillars, see? And they're left intact, see? That's an ore body. That is not native copper, see?
What's the difference between... I mean, what's the difference between a conglomerate copper? Do you still consider conglomerate and amygdaloid copper to be native copper?
They're native copper, okay. Yes.
It's just the form that...
The rock.
Yeah.
The rock is softer on amygdaloid, and the conglomerate is real hard, and it's in small round pebbles. And like white pine, you can't hardly see no copper in it. It's so fine. And they have to have flotation. If they didn't have flotation, they wouldn't be able to operate, because they'd lose so much in the water, see? It's not native. They do have native copper. When CNH operated that, years ago, they did mine some native copper there, but not where they're mining now. It's an ore body.
Are the levels of all the mines around here, do they go down like that?
Or no. White pine is around 8 or 10 degrees on the pitch. And the steepest with the less pitch is the Mohawk would be. That's that's flat. But Malik load mines are 70s ahead of time. I could have picked it up from some of my history. I have it. There's no question about that.
I'll just mark it down and we can look it up later, okay?
Yeah.
The deepest shaft. Somebody told me that the Quincy was quite deep.
Quincy is, but it's very flat. On the bottom levels, it dips to 45 degrees. It is. I can get you that too if you want to.
Was there a standard angle of the shaft, or did it depend on how the load was in the ground?
Well, Quincy, it started somewhere on the... if I look at it, I can get it exactly. But somewhere would say like 50 degrees or so. And then after they went down a certain ditch distance, the load flattened, and they was down to 45. They had a flatness. They had pulley wheels there on the hang where the skip rope would always make the curve where the bend was, see?
But there wasn't a standard angle to any mine, huh?
Well, as far as I know, like conglomerate and Atlantic and them, they was on a standard pitch, that they didn't, the pitch of the load didn't dip. Atlantic was 56 degrees. When it started from surface, it went all the way down. And as far as I know, the conglomerate was too. Painesdale, or the Champion mine, they started on, I would say, approximate 72 degrees. Then when they got down to the 24th level, then the load dipped. Then they had to put in crosscuts, because I know I worked there, see?
I'm just thinking, I'm going to change the subject, if you don't mind. Oh yeah, I know what I was going to ask. You mentioned Tamarack. Is that the one on the Portage Lake? The city on the...
No, Tamarack is in the Calumet end. You see, there was the... it was a independent company, Tamarack was. It was the Bigelow and Clark and those that were interested in that, and they got this Captain John Daniel. He was one of the most, we'd say, practical mining men, best informed around here. And he was most like their brains. And this Tamarack Company got the land ahead from the hanging. I don't know if it be west or westerly direction or what it would be from the Calumet. And the Calumet was checked there. They couldn't go any farther. So they started with Captain John Daniel, had those vertical shafts put, and they caught